Welcome back to the programme. A caller says, regarding the defective blocks debate, the delay is due totally to the government's determination to ignore the problem, to totally neglect the Irish citizen. Another, I find it hard to believe that appeals board was set up and has made no decision, has not interacted or given no answers to anybody, no records of meetings. Well, we have also, of course, and it goes without saying, but I must say, we've contacted, as soon as we knew we were going to be doing that piece, we contacted the Department of Housing for a comment as to what is the delay, what's the process, etc. So, as I say, that goes without saying, but I must say, just very important that we pass that on. We were speaking to Breda yesterday. Breda has written a new book which chronicles her very difficult childhood, an awful lot of trauma in her childhood, but particularly then the decades in the mental health system. And I don't want to sort of paraphrase her whole life, but she was never listened to or asked, or there was no attempt to get to the core problem as to why she was suffering with mental illness until very late on, and it turned her life around when she did. And her book, she hopes, Unseen, I believe it's called, is to, Breda O'Reilly, is to give hope to others, but tell her story as well. Greg, what an extraordinary woman, honestly. What an extraordinary woman. The courage and bravery it must have taken Breda to write openly about what she endured is incredible. I think the real conversation now needs to focus on yet another government-backed institution that has stripped people of their lives, dignity and freedom. What Breda went through in the Irish psychiatric system is nothing short of horrendous. The taboo around mental health still silences too many people. Breda's courage is blowing that door open, giving others the strength to speak out. I'll go out to buy her book today, Unseen. I hope others take courage to talk to friends, family and professionals about their own struggles in life. What an incredible woman. Let me see. I want to sort of stay on track with some of these comments. Greg, if you're on the M50 every day, there's no point ringing Declan on 2FM. Your country people get it handy. You love to complain about everything. I don't know. Is there a Declan on 2FM? Yeah, we don't need to complain about everything, but you have to hold hold power to account as well. And I think people are entitled to ask, at least, you know, why are these works not being done at night? Why are they not better organised? Why are there not alternative routes mapped out and made available to the public? Or indeed, the public told that alternative routes aren't suitable for certain types of traffic. I don't think that's a big ask. I don't think that's moaning. And you know what? You probably wouldn't get heard at 2FM either. We listen to people here. No harm to them. They're a different type of station. Hi, all road work should be done during the summertime when no schools are on. Same every year. Once the schools open, the road work start. Cheers. But then, what about tourism, etc.? We do have quite a bit of tourism traffic. What kind of a message would that send out if parts of the county were in gridlock every summer? It's a toughie, you know? When do you do it? Stop running down the workers that fix the roadworks. They're doing their work. If going out, just go early. There's actually been zero criticism of the workers at all. This is about planning. These are lads and ladies that are going out and doing their work in tough conditions. I hope people are always respectful to them. I haven't heard an iota of criticism towards any workers who are fixing the roads at all. This is about planning that people are concerned about. But Catherine's got lots of supports, Catherine. I don't know if you were expecting it, but lots of people agreeing with you, Catherine. Here's one, Greg. I totally agree with Catherine. People just need to leave a little bit earlier. A comment on the cost of living. Electricity Ireland is a sub-branch of ESB, which is state-owned. What's stopping the government directing them to lower their prices, which would then incentivise other private companies to lower their prices in order to remain competitive? I think really there you're kind of outlining the anti-competitive nature that might have. I don't know. I was contacted by a person who is a law graduate, and this maybe it's just an off chance. Maybe someone in this realm will listen to this and can help them. So my name is such and such. I'm a law graduate holding both a BCL degree and a master's degree from University College Cork. I've also completed all of my FE1 exams and passed them successfully. Despite my qualifications and dedication, I'm finding it extremely difficult to secure a traineeship to start my legal career. I've contacted numerous solicitors, but some haven't even replied, which has been very upsetting. Becoming a solicitor is something I've wanted to do since I was little, so this situation has been particularly disheartening. I'm currently living in Donegal and was hoping to secure a traineeship somewhere in Letterkenny. I'd had hoped to begin the hybrid course in December, but I cannot start until I find a traineeship. I'd be very grateful if you could mention my situation on your show. Any exposure or guidance would mean a great deal and might help me take the next step in my career. So this is someone, a woman who has obviously got all of the necessary qualifications to get to this stage of her career. She's struggling to find a traineeship. So if you are a solicitor out there, maybe you're very busy and didn't see the application or what have you. This person is very keen to begin her traineeship so she can continue her studies. That's the hybrid course in December. So if you're in the area of law, maybe you could help this person out, or indeed just give her some advice. You can get in touch with us, of course, 086 60 25000. Hi, Greg. According to RTE News, Ireland gave 34 vehicles to Ukraine, which is an out-and-out violation of Irish neutrality by cutely claiming the 34 vehicles are a donation. They are a donation to the war. Under international law, Russia now has the right to attack Ireland and thus defend itself, since Ireland is now actively engaged in the Ukraine war. But we did send over flak jackets and other pieces of equipment to them. The caveat being that the equipment can't be used in sort of a combat situation. We've also provided plenty of training too. So to some extent, that cat is already out of the bag. Aren't you very honest, Greg? Yeah, I think so. For the most part, this is off a chat we had yesterday talking about my own dealings with credit card companies and what have you. I work for the HSE and I've had to take on a second job in the evenings. That's how tight it is for one listener. Greg, who you're with for $12.99 for your phone, well, it's for the SIM card. I went through that yesterday and I went through various options and what have you. So if you want to listen to the third hour of the podcast yesterday of the 9 till noon show, I run through how much the SIM cards are, who the piggyback carriers are, your international roaming, etc. On all of them, there's no limits really on data except on POST. But text messages, there's a 5,000 limit. But I mean, text, I haven't sent an SMS in a long time. Good morning, Greg. You and the left that are complaining now about free speech and cancellation had no problem with others getting cancelled and sacked for telling the truth, i.e. during COVID and George Floyd. The left burned America down over a drug addict dying from a fentanyl overdose. Did any buildings burn after Kirk's death? No is the answer. These vile, demonic people cheering on the death of a married man with kids deserve what they get. They reap what they sow. Yeah, I have never engaged in any nasty language like that about anyone ever on the internet, and there's no place for it. I'm just standing back watching on as different sides of different arguments switch their positions left, right and centre to suit their narratives. I'm not involved. You know, I'm certainly not on the left either, and I'm not on the right. Maybe I'm a centrist, I don't know. But thanks for your listening to the show, by the way, and regularly texting in. It fit Donegal deputies better to sell the old courthouse and put that money, along with the 7 million that the government seems to have spared, to build the new bridge for Letterkenny. No point in tourists if they're stuck in traffic for hours to just get around. Good morning, Greg. That person on their holidays in Tenerife is bang on. I was in Gran Canaria last week, and the infrastructure and public transport they have is years ahead of Ireland. Their diesel prices were around €1 per litre, 60 plus cents cheaper than us. Our politicians, well, they're taking the mick out of the mick, they say. Yeah, I remember years ago, my parents were in Albufeira, I think, and prices were still kind of expensive, or they felt expensive at that time. But anyway, I thought it was a good idea with my brother, flew into Spain, and we hired a little car, you know, and when I say a little car, it was a little car, and drove from the airport in Spain to Albufeira. Now, I'm not great with remembering in each and every detail, but I don't really remember turning, if you know what I mean, turning the steering wheel. It felt at that time, and I covered more than the distance between Donegal and Dublin in half the time. And the road was just wide and straight and long and pothole free. So yeah, in different countries, they seem to have a better roads infrastructure. A lot of people upset about this $7 million being spent on the old courthouse in Letterkenny. Check out our news website if you don't have all the details. But the caller said, this caller believes it's a waste. What's more needed is a new general hospital in the west coast of Donegal. Did he ever go to the A&E when it's very busy? And that's every day. Patients waiting on beds sometimes 24 hours and more. Staff under pressure as well as that. There's a lot more things that that $7 million could be used for. But, you know, $7 million... we spend more than that in 2 days on IPAS centres and hotel accommodation for Ukrainians. So, I mean, when you put it into the wider context, $7 million for a new facility for the community of Letterkenny, I mean, you know, like, it's so much money, but in this day and age, $7 million almost seems like nothing given the level of spending. A caller says a lot of racism is because people believe that the state is treating other races different to how they treat Irish people. Did the Journal examine hatred against other minorities like travellers and the disabled? Well, a lot of the hate crimes actually already is including people of the travelling community, and there is a kinship between travellers and other minorities because they do have very similar experiences, it has to be said. But there's a very important point in your there's a very important point, I think, contained within your text, because you blame the state for treating other races different as to how they treat white Irish people. But we're talking about levels of abuse and hatred towards people of other races, the travelling community, etc., not the state. The state kind of gets off scot-free in relation to that. So why not divert the hate and the anger towards another human being? If you cut, they bleed. If you needed that blood, you'd take it, right? Why put anger towards them instead of those that you actually blame, not you, the texter, the people who create people differently? Do you know what I mean? The anger sort of doesn't go to the state, it goes to the others. And that's not just in this instance. I'm on about it could be pitching those on social welfare versus the working and vice versa. Those on medical cards and those that just can't get medical cards. Those who can get bus places and those that can't get bus places, over and over and over again. And it's often the people who turn on each other, really, when there's a common denominator in resolving those issues. Greg, this is the first year in 10 years my husband and his friends went to the ploughing. Yesterday, they spent the day and home last night. It all, yes, normally he went Tuesday, home Thursday. All right, so we only went one day. Why was that? Tell me more. 086 60 25,000. It's jackpot day. Good luck if you are playing Radio Bingo. Tim Hayes is the former head of communications at the European Commission representation in Ireland and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Tim.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure. Now, there's an event taking place on Monday in the Central Library in Letterkenny. Talk to me about this event.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Central Library hosts one of the European Commission's Europe Direct Centres. And the Europe Direct Centres are places where people can go to find information about the European Union. And we have them spread all over the country. In fact, in Donegal, you're quite lucky because you have one in Letterkenny and also one in the Gaeltacht in Gweedore. And the Europe Direct Centres run various events to increase people's knowledge about the European Union. And the event on Monday is just one of these events. And it's been organised by the people in the Central Library. And they've asked me to speak a little bit about the subjects of miscommunication, information, and the difficulties that we're having with social media. And it's my pleasure to be able to go there. As you said, I previously worked with the European Commission. Now I'm a member of what we call Team Europe Direct, which is a group of people who know a little bit about the European Union, and we're invited to go and speak to people and to increase people's knowledge about the European Union. So everybody's welcome at the Central Library in Letterkenny on Monday at 11 o'clock. You've got to register beforehand, but you'll find that information on the website.
What is the thrust of what you'll be talking about? What is mis and disinformation in this day and age?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, you know, people look at what happened in the UK during the time of the Brexit.
I do that one all the time for some reason, mostly in the morning.
And you can see that actors use social media to try and persuade people to take a view that they wouldn't normally have perhaps taken. And the thing about misinformation is that it's something which is, you know, maybe vaguely true, maybe a little bit untrue, but it's something that people use to change people's minds. Disinformation is a little bit more cynical. It's where bad actors try and change something in the minds of people, and they tell lies or they tell untruths. And you find it quite often in some of, can I take, for example, Russia has been using disinformation in the context of elections and referendum in nearby countries, because obviously it doesn't want to lose its power in these countries.
Who determines what it is and who polices it? Just using your Brexit analogy for an example, one of the biggest spreaders of mis and disinformation was Boris Johnson, who then went on to lead the United Kingdom, right? So that, I mean, and Donald Trump, for an example, very clearly he signed a letter that was given to Jeffrey Epstein for his 50th birthday, and now just point out he's saying he didn't do it, right? Now, he did do it, because if this was some sort of a setup, it would be 30 years in the planning, presuming that eventually he would become president of the United States. So I'm just giving Emmanuel Macron had a tete-a-tete with his wife before they exited an aeroplane and tried to make out that this was AI generated. Disinformation, misinformation, nonsense, right? So I'm just giving the leadership of three main countries there. We could also even talk about the housing figures in Donegal, in Ireland being massaged, right? So commencements are being counted incorrectly by the actual government itself. So, and I'm not trying to get political with you, by the way. I'm just trying to give examples, right? So who are the arbiters then of mis and disinformation when we have leaders of nations who themselves employ mis and disinformation when it suits them?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Greg. I mean, the thing is that, you know, social media has sort of taken over our lives. I mean, we no longer run out in the morning and buy newspapers to see who's died. We get the information from the radio and from the social media. And the thing is that the social media has been used for political purposes. And sometimes it's very, very difficult to see what is true and what's not true. And I mean, in the commission, they started a project to look at fact checking. And sometimes you see some of the media doing fact checking. And for example, if there are debates on the television, you get somebody on the side. No, is what he has said about these figures true? Is this absolutely true or is it not true? But you're right. I mean, the idea that politicians try to persuade people of their views, you know, has been there for time immemorial. It's just that things have become a little bit more nuanced, if you like, or maybe even a little bit more dangerous now, that it is so easy for people to spread incorrect or misleading information.
You see, I just get the impression that what might happen is an example might be given that a crime occurs in Dublin, and then certain elements on social media claim that an illegal immigrant or an immigrant is responsible for that. It causes riots. As it turns out, that wasn't true. Of course, that is an example of mis and disinformation, okay? But the problem is, again, I'll ask, who are the arbiters of that? Who determines that when the powers that be themselves are engaged in mis and disinformation all of the time? So the easy excuse is to sort of use one example of a highly contentious sort of social subject, but it doesn't really, for me, talk to the wider thing that, I mean, for example, is if the leader of Germany comes out right and says a genocide is not happening in Gaza, is that mis or disinformation?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that what the European Commission has done is it's tried to bring together all of the social media platforms and to introduce a sort of a standard that they have to live with. And the social media platforms are interested in being as compliant as possible. Obviously, they always say, oh, look, you know, we're not publishers. We're not even editors. We just take the stuff as it comes on social media. So even on X some time back, they removed this whole idea of monitoring or editing of what it was that people were saying. So it's a very dangerous tool. I mean, you know, it's a new tool. It's something that people haven't had a chance to get to terms with. But the difficulty is that right now, a lot of people, in particular the younger generation, are using social media and what they see on the internet as being fact. Mm. We always had this problem, in fact, with newspapers. I mean, just think about the situation in Ireland where, for example, a political party set up its own newspaper, which is no longer in Ireland. But the idea was that, you know, you could use light propaganda to pass on your message. And it's the same when it comes to Gaza. It's the same when it comes to Ukraine. It was the same in the Second World War.
Okay, well, just in relation to that then, again, you know, publicly funded TV stations like RTE or the BBC are very, let's say, very sympathetic to Israel, okay, but are diametrically opposed to Russia, okay? So, and I'm not, by the way, just, I'm not coming at this from any angle or trying to paint anyone into a corner, Tim. I'm just pretty normal and a look on and observe. Do you get where I'm coming from, right? So how is that any more untrue, or how is that any more misinformation or disinformation than what Jimmy in his mother's basement might put on X? Do you know what I'm on about? Again, I'm sorry, I just think this is much bigger. So why is Russia bad and Israel good in state-funded media? So where's the mis and disinformation? And could Russia not be having a conversation now and saying, look what the Irish and English are doing in terms of how they frame what we're trying to achieve? And I just think the conversation has got bigger than focusing on, you know, as I say, one Egypt saying something on X.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that what it boils down to is democracy and a combination of the right to free speech plus the right of the people to be able to educate themselves and form their own opinions. And that's the basic problem that we have with disinformation. This is why we're trying in the European Union to build what we call a democracy shield to avoid the fact that people get inundated with these bad ideas, these incorrect ideas, these false rumors. And the thing is that people should be in a position to find out themselves what it is, what's true, what is not true. And in the organizations such as the government, the European Union, we've got to find a way to ensure that democracy reigns supreme, because that's what we're built on in Europe. We're built on democracy. Mm. So you're looking at something like Russia. It's not very democratic to take over your neighbor. But at the same time, you know, I've spoken to people who were tuned in with what was happening in Russia at the time, and they were saying that, you know, Putin was painting the West as the aggressor in this case, and the people actually believed it.
Yeah, but there's a strong argument. I'm not going to say battle. There is a strong argument that the West was the aggressor, and that there was ample opportunity. There was ample opportunity for Joe Biden and Putin to sit around a table and talk about his concerns of NATO inching ever closer to the Russian border. I mean, that is worthy of conversation. And I mean, now you have Donald Trump himself, who's actually stating that was the case. But I don't want to drag you into sort of other spaces. I know exactly what you're... I just feel that social media as a user was very... had a very liberal lean to it. And I think really, to be honest with you, other voices were actually silenced in that space. Now it's gone the other way, where the left and right feel they can say anything in these spaces as well. And I think a lot of the centrists don't even go into these spaces any longer. When was the last time you saw a travel blog on X? You're not doing that stuff anymore. Yep. I don't post on it anymore because I don't need the flack or the rouse, right? So I think that space has become that space.
Yeah, great. But the issue is then, you know, you look at the results of elections and you see to what extent the extremists win or don't win. And you see the change over time. Take France as an example, where the right wing in France have sort of come from, you know, single percentage figures to a question of, you know, which of the people in the National Front is going to be the next leader in France. So you have this movement whereby social media, you know, writes its own agenda.
But is that not good? Is that not, you talked of democracy, is it not democratic that people, just because maybe I don't agree with right-wing politics, it doesn't mean I want social media to not give them a platform to grow?
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is that our democracy is based on representative democracy, whereby the people vote and they elect the politicians, and they trust the politicians then to make decisions for them. And you'll always get at sides, you know, the right side or the left side, you get, you know, 10 or 15% of the people who want to be against the government or want to do something else or who want to be populist. But the difficulty is that, and I'm straying a little bit into politics now, the difficulty is that sometimes these populist parties actually fear going into government because they don't want to. And if you look at places like the Netherlands, for example, where splinter groups have got into government, they didn't last very long because, you know, it's easy to sit on the sidelines, if you wish, and throw brickbats at people. It's a far different story when you're actually in government and have got to make the decisions.
We've seen that to some extent in Italy, Poland as well, I think, at different times. Right, so this free talk is on Monday, the 22nd of September at 11 a.m. It's in the Central Library, Letterkenny. It's on the challenges of misinformation and disinformation with the EU. And the event also will highlight Sustainable Development Goals Week. People need to register, I believe. Isn't that correct?
That's right.
Have that information? I do. Okay, I'll read that out. I hope for 1 second, Tim, you didn't deem me to be argumentative. That wasn't my point. It's just an area I find very, very interesting.
It's a fascinating area, and there are so many sides to it. And you, coming from a journalistic perspective, would obviously have your own side.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, listen, thanks so much. Anyway, thank you. Take care. No, all right.
It's been our pleasure. Listen, thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Right. If you're interested in that, how do you register? EU direct at donegallibrary.ie, EU direct at donegallibrary.ie, or telephone 07491 24950. We have that info here if you want that. I'm dismiss information, you know, it's everyone's using it now, everyone uses it, and some of the, you know, did you take my point that I was trying to make, you know, like, as long as we're not trying to, like, I see what's happening again in the States. They're trying to shut out sort of liberal voices and deplatform people, get them sacked and what have you. That's not free speech either. You can't, free speech is not free of consequences. So if I say something, I can use free speech to say something about someone, but if I say something that's libelous, they can take my house off me. So I can say it, you could say, but I'm not free of consequences in doing so. But I think that needs to be in a level playing field, respectful, non-hate, non-incitement to violence, but also the ability to speak freely. And you can't quieten a voice like Tommy Robinson's in the UK, for example, because there's millions of people that agree with him, that they're concerned with how Britain is going. Are you supposed to deplatform those people, not allow them to speak? In a way, then, that actually... Their stock rises as a result. So, welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Just a bit of an update to that traffic news I gave you a little earlier. A road closure is in place as a result of a road traffic collision that occurred on the R250. That's at New Mills. Now, diversions are in place via New Mills Bridge and at Rahidog onto the L5994 through Drumminaud. Now, the diversion route is narrow, so drivers, HGV drivers, I'm talking to you, please consider an alternative route and please avoid the area if at all possible. We don't have any further details as that's an ongoing activity, but we'll bring them to you just as soon as we can. Now, Noel Cunningham is Harvey's Point Hotel Ambassador and author and friend of the show. Good morning to you, Noel. How are you getting on, my friend?
Good morning, and Greg, I'm delighted to say, and you at Highland Radio are such supporters. I'm down in Galway, and we're opening a lovely charity shop for Cancer Care West.
Oh, wow, so lovely.
Very exciting. We're opening a beautiful charity shop out in Uachtaráid. And of course, again, thank you for your support of the Donegal Camino, yourself, and of course, the Rabbit family and everybody at Highland. We are so grateful.
Oh, no, listen, that's fine. And we do appreciate that. But this conversation is about Harvey's Point. And it's obviously a very, very big year because it's the 25th anniversary of the big cabaret shows. 25 years. Can you believe that, by the way?
It's unbelievable. And, you know, it couldn't have happened a better year because we just were voted the number one hotel in Ireland by Paulo Coniglia, the respected travel writer with The Independent, and enter the Hall of Fame. And that combined with this anniversary of something that 25 years ago was very unusual. You know, nobody did dinner cabaret shows up in our part of the world. It was more for the old Jury's Hotel in Ball's Bridge. And, you know, nobody ever thought that, well, a cabaret would work beautifully in Donegal. And thus it was proved. And 25 years later, people come from all over the Northwest and right across to Belfast, down to Cork, over to Galway. It's quite extraordinary. And we are so grateful to the great people who support us and many who come back year after year. And I will use the opportunity to say thank you for helping us achieve that 25 years of lovely entertainment, delightful dinner, and just a lovely night out in the midst of, you know, when we're kind of at a loss as to what to do with the visitors who are staying with us, or you have people coming to visit our county for the first time to have something to recommend. You know, it's just a kind of a phenomenon, really, the Harvey's Point Cabaret, and we're always amazed that there we start again, and all of a sudden our houses are full. It's great.
It's not surprising it's so successful, I don't think, because obviously you've got regular people returning, but you've got the shoulders of the tourism season this year as well, so there's still loads of visitors around, and there aren't many nights out that are, you feel like truly like a special night, a date night or an anniversary night or something that marks a special moment or a special occasion with someone who's special to you. Because, you know, it's €75 per person. For that, you get a lovely 5-course meal, don't you? Eamon Gillespie is your fabulous host as well. And then a range of fantastic acts. And there's just not much like that local.
That is true. And, you know, we chose wisely when we chose Wednesday evenings, and the current season runs right up until the first Wednesday in November. We chose wisely because on a Wednesday throughout Ireland, it wasn't, as I would call, a great dance night or a ballroom night. So you had some of Ireland's finest artists, you know, think Michael English, think you name them. We've had them all, and they're at a loose end on a Wednesday. So they were always delighted to come and have a slightly different evening with us. And they did it at a reasonable cost, which helped us to put it on and to be able to, you know, have a show with lots of variety and lots of different artists. And as you say, for any special occasion, and a special word to Eamon Gillespie, who makes every special occasion extra special. And when he returned to Harvey's Point, I was so glad to see him coming back, because I myself hosted it for about 14 years when Eamon went off to gain further experience in different areas of life, and then he came back to us, which was a great, great bonus for the cabaret and for the hotel.
And just another word too, Harvey's Hotel hitting the top of the Hot 100 list of Ireland's best hotels 25. That is an automatic entry into the Hall of Fame. And just to give you some sense of the names it's joining: Ashford Castle in County Mayo, Kelly's Resort Hotel and Spa Wexford, Adair Manor in County Limerick. So it is right up there with, and it always has had a place amongst the greatest destinations. And of course, your neighbours and friends too, the Loch Ness Castle making its way up the top 100 list as well, which is good. And Arnold's Hotel in Dunfanaghy, again, another... The hotel industry and people within it work very closely, so each will enjoy the other's success. There's no doubt about that. Right, okay, so the show opens at 6:45. Performances start promptly at 7:30 p.m. and you can make your reservation by calling 0749722208. And have a great night. Now, I want to say one thing. When you're back recording your advert next for Harvey's Point Noel, are you with me?
I am.
Right, you used to say 07497222208. Okay, and I like that. But I note in your most recent advert you say 97422 or 22208, and I just don't think it's got the same pizzazz. So I would implore you, the next time you're up, I want to see a return to 22208. Could you do that for me?
Greg, I always do what I'm told, and I'm so glad. I'm so glad you mentioned our other great hotels in Donegal, like Arnold's, Rathmullen House, Loch Ness. We are all doing something for our county to attract people to our county, to attract more visitors, to put on a better offer for local and tourists alike. So if you want to know more about us, please call me on 0749722208.
Thank you. That's all I wanted. Come here, enjoy your trip in Galway. Thank you so very much indeed, Mr. Noel Cunningham there. So well done to Harvey's, the other hotels mentioned there as well. As we mentioned, Monday night in the Abbey, they've the bar area and the seating area all nicely lit and cosy. I haven't been in there for quite some time, I'll be completely honest with you, but down the back, absolutely full of people eating, and quite a number in the bar, and live music on a Monday night as well, you know. So I've mentioned a lot of hotels, so I'm not favouring one over the other, but there's people doing amazing things and working really hard still in the hospitality sector as we get even ever closer. And I think really for the tourism season is there almost up to Halloween, if not Halloween and beyond now. It's just a different type of clientele and probably a bigger spending cohort. Hi, Greg. I hear you're a lefty now. I heard it on the wireless, so it must be true. I don't think so. I don't think I am. But there you are. I don't think I'm anything. I don't think I belong to any group. I really don't feel like I do. I just watch on and I see people almost implode and I see... Anyway, it doesn't matter. I really don't want to sound like I'm ranting. Roadworks need done. I agree with that part. But saying leave early doesn't always make sense, especially for parents when there's laws in place because you can't drop kids off at school before a certain time. Yeah, that's the lived reality there too, isn't it? 5 million per day, that would clear up the defective blocks crisis in a short time. Yeah, I know what you're referencing there. Appreciate your time. The problem with the roads is the council hold... the council hold on to the money all year to see do they need to use some of this money for something else. Then the last 3 months of every year, they try and spend what is left over all at once. This happens every year. I'm not quite sure it's like that because then there's additional money that comes in, top-up money and stuff. But anyway... Another, I find it hard to believe that the appeals board was set up and has made no decisions, has not interacted or answered anybody. There's no records of meetings. This is one that is very strange. And again, we have a very specific inquiry in with the Department of Housing in this regard. Deliberate government bureau... bureaucratic abuse when it should be a user-friendly, stress-free process. Right, okay, that's another opinion there, and we do appreciate them all. 086 60 25,000. We have more comments over here. I just have to lean a little bit. My apologies. Greg, thank you for your show. You've totally exposed your guest for what they're trying to do. Believe us. Do not ask questions. We are the truth. Everything else is disinformation. I cannot believe the Irish government is edging closer and closer to communism and hope that people finally wake up to what is happening, not just across Ireland, but across Europe. Another, total rubbish. The EU may have started off with democracy, but they've moved to a European style of democracy, which is a cross between democracy and dictatorship, where the large players rule and everything else is based on money and control. Greg, what you're describing is social pushback. There was never any censorship beyond legitimate hate speech, only people pushing back against what other people said, and people crying that they were getting pushed back, which eventually convinced enough people like you that they are victims for getting pushed back for bigotry. I'm so sick of this argument. We have Trump threatening Australia because a journalist asked him a question he didn't like. Two Late Show hosts now cancelled because they were critical of him. This is what actual censorship looks like, not getting your feelings hurt because some blue hair called you racist for saying something racist. Well, firstly, I'm sorry if you didn't insert me in it. Jimmy Kimmel, or Kimmel, what's his name? It is Jimmy Kimmel. He had his show pulled overnight. Now, what he said was that the person responsible for shooting Charlie Kirk was a member of the MAGA movement. Now, that's not true, right? So he's used his platform to spread a mistruth. It is not true, and it's measurably not true as well. So, I mean, he wasn't cancelled for... I mean, it is free speech. I don't think he should have been cancelled. I think people should be free to say what they have to say to some extent. But he did say a blatant lie, a demonstrable, provable lie, and he's paid the price for it. But again, Trump's pulling the strings in the background, and a lot of that's to do with a merger between two big media organisations in the US, and the regulator appointed by Trump has sort of said, right, you know, if you don't get your ducks in a row, we're going to stop this merger. So it really then comes down to money, doesn't it?